Hello, and welcome to Mental Health Insights. This is a podcast where we break down and make mental health simple and easy to understand so that you can do something about your own mental health to make it better. My name is Craig Faust, and I am a licensed professional counselor here in the state of Missouri. And today we're going to talk about suicide. Suicide is a complex topic, so thankfully we are going to have an expert on understanding suicide, an expert on working with those that have suicidal thoughts, Paula Fontanelli, who is an accomplished author. She has an online course to help those that want to support those with suicide and understand more about it. And Paula also has her own podcast called Understand Suicide. And if this is something that you want to kind of jump right to it and look into Paula and some of the great things that she's doing, you can go and look at her website, understandsuicide.com, which we'll talk more about later on in this podcast as well. So let's go ahead and jump into Paula and my conversation, where we will talk about suicide, some of the warning signs of suicide, some of the things that you can do, and just ways of kind of conceptualizing suicide to give you a better understanding of your own biases. And of course, if you want a deeper understanding, then I would recommend Paula's podcast, Understand Suicide. And let us go ahead and jump in to today's conversation. So I am here with Paula Fontanelli. Hi, Paula.
Hello. Hi, Craig.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about suicide. And Paula, you are an expert in this. Can you tell us a little bit about how does one go about actually going into this type of field, specifically wanting to work with this mm-hmm. population?
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it happened, and I actually, I interviewed my podcast a lot of clinicians who work and who are specialized in suicide prevention and have a lot of suicidal mm-hmm. clients. And what I see is most of the times what happened to them is what happened to me. When you lose someone to suicide, and then that becomes like a mission or something that you say, wow, I should do something to prevent suicide. So that's what happened to me. In 2005, my dad died by suicide. And at the time, I had no experience with suicide. I was in my 30s. I hadn't lost a friend to suicide, or maybe I didn't know because there's so much stigma, right? And at the time, I'm Brazilian, and at the time I worked as a journalist. I worked as a journalist for 20-something years. That's the profession I had before. And I had so many questions, Craig, you know, all the what ifs, all the should I have done something differently? How could I not see that this was going on with my dad and all these things that families go through? Right. So at the time I obsessively read about it. And what I found was that in my country, in Brazil, there were no books about suicide. There was nothing, no websites were very limited. Even hotline was something that we had an NGO that did that, but it wasn't anything really national. So I became very interested in just working with that gap. Let's bridge that gap. And I wrote a book about suicide. I spent 3 years interviewing clinicians, specialists all over the world, because in Brazil, we really didn't have many. I had a few. So it actually changed completely the course of my life, because I decided, okay, I'm going to help people who are going through either, you know, the risk of suicide or grief. And now that's what I do. I went back to school, did my training in counseling, in psychoanalysis too. And here I am. That's what I work with. It completely changed my life, but that's how it started.
And one of the things I heard you say is that you had noticed a gap in like your country. And I think that a lot of, you probably seen this a lot. There's a lot of gaps in different cultures and different countries and different ethnic groups and all these across the board when talking about suicide. And you actually wrote a book and you have a very good podcast too. So can you tell us a little bit about the book and the podcast before we kind of go further into actually talking
More
about suicide?
So the book is called, the title is Understanding Suicide, Living with Loss, Paths to Prevention. You can find it on Amazon. Just type my name. In the book, I actually, the first edition I published into 3 years after my father died. So I noticed that the response was immense in Brazil. It was actually a finalist at the book, Brazilian Book Award at the time. And because really there was nothing. And I decided to have a website, and then that it just progresses, right? Because of online everything, now podcast, and my podcast, I've had it actually this month. I'm having the 2nd year anniversary of the podcast, and it's called Understand Suicide. You can find it on all platforms where you listen to your podcasts. And it's just so much stigma, Craig, as you said, the gap is there. And one of the reasons, because I have a lot of content in Portuguese, I have the book in Portuguese, but I also decided 3 years ago that I needed to do this in English too, so that I could reach a broader audience. And that's why in 2019, I had a new edition of the book with new chapters for us counselors too, on how to deal with grief and how to treat suicide grief. But as you said, the gap is immense because of the stigma mainly.
So the beautiful thing about you writing that book, especially, is that I want to take our conversation and I actually want to take us away from the question of, you know, the why question about suicide. Mm-hmm. And there are people that are listening to this that have maybe known somebody in their life, or they may have someone that has left their life, or maybe they have heard about this or anything, right? Especially because it's something that suicide is something that is across the board, right? So whether or not it's different celebrities that they've heard about this or anything like that. So I'm kind of curious, for someone that is looking, for someone that's around them that may have different signs that they're thinking about suicide, or that they may kind of be in that headspace, what are some things that, you know, we as the average person can be looking for in those that are close to us, to kind of know that maybe this is the space that they're in?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I want to divide my answer into two parts, and I'm going to start with, before we look into warning signs and risk factors and things like that are very important. One of the things that we don't do, and we should, before we even go there, is to look at ourselves. How do I see suicide? What are my biases? Because that's going to have a huge impact on how you talk to this person. What are your opinions about suicide?
Like if if I'm sitting there from the perspective that I think that those that that are thinking about suicide, there's something wrong with them, or I'm thinking down on them, or if I think they're really scary or anything like that, that's going to color my experience talking with them. That's what you're saying?
Of course. It's going to underline. Yeah. Everything that you say is going to come from that internal place. So first of all, sit with yourself and ask these questions. Do I think that suicide is, there's so many things we hear, right? Or is it because they were cowards, or is it brave because they were brave? It's none of them. If you can come out of this interview, after you listen to this, one takeaway that you can learn about suicidal people is it's not about dying. It's about ending unbearable pain. And that pain can be from many, many sources. Many times what they want is not to die. That's why it's so preventable. If you bring in hope, if you hold their hands, if you're supportive, many, many times they don't even think about suicide again. because they felt supported. So it's about pain. It's not necessarily about dying, but it's important for you to observe that in yourself. I'll give you a very simple example. One of the things we say is, and that's a myth about suicide, many people do not talk about suicide or don't ask about suicide because they think, if I bring it up, I'm going to put the idea into their heads. That's one of the most common myths about suicide. We know from research, from clinical experience, that it's the opposite. You're going to tell them, listen, you can talk about this to me. I'm comfortable with it. So it's a sense of relief. Many times they're going through horrible pain, but they don't feel that anybody will get it, that no one will be able to listen. So these are some of the things that you have to think about. So given that example, I'll give you two examples on how you can ask, and you will see how you view suicide will come out, right? So one of the ways you can say is, and that's the most helpful way, is to say, listen, I've been noticing that you're more, I don't know, it depends, angry, withdrawn, it kind of disappeared on us. I don't know what's going on, but I can tell something's going on. And maybe you're going through pain. And I was just wondering, sometimes when you're going through, you know, tough times in our lives, we think about suicide. Is that happening to you? That's one way of asking. Here's another way. And that shows that you're either afraid or that you think this is wrong. You can come to someone and say, listen, you're not thinking about suicide, are you? Do you think the response will be the same?
Well, I know that whenever you said that, my knee-jerk reaction was to get defensive right away.
Of course. Of course. So that's why I say, think about your opinion and your biases about suicide, because that's going to directly impact how you approach this person.
Right. Well, and that first way that you talk to us, you're approaching someone and talking to them with respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's super important. And I love the perspective that you gave to us, that this is someone that is going through an immense amount of pain. And it's our job to have that immense amount of respect and dignity, mm-hmm. so that we can help them talk to us about that pain, so that we actually have the opportunity to possibly do something. Or to at least help, maybe not actually do something about the pain, but help them feel like they're heard and understood, which will then help lessen the load of their pain.
Yeah. I'll give you an example that happened to me. And this was, mm-hmm. I don't know, 5-6 years after my father died. So I had all the knowledge. I had published the book. So I knew about warning signs. And I'll jump into warning signs. Mm-hmm. But I had a friend of mine actually call me, and I immediately could tell that she was calling to say goodbye. I remember that I sat down and I said, listen, I hear that you are in pain. I can tell there's something's going on with you. And I was wondering, are you thinking about suicide? Because it sounds like you're calling to say goodbye. I was very honest, and that's what you should do. And she just broke down in tears. She started crying, and she had everything prepared for that week. She was going to do it that week. And what I did was I said, listen, I get you. Tell me what's going on. That's the first thing you should say, right? Tell me what's going on. I need to understand, right? And she started telling me all the things that she was, you know, that were happening in her life. And I said, I get you. I understand. That sounds like a lot. Can I just ask you something? Can you just give me some time? Let's see if I can help you. And I actually, in her case, because I knew her well, I thought it was a case of seeing a psychiatrist. I myself called. I said, I have a good psychiatrist that I know, and I'm sure that he will make time to see you as soon as you can. And I actually set up the appointment. I took her to the doctor, and she's still alive. This was like 20 years ago. So, it's about you giving them space to talk and be heard. It's not about judgment. That's the first thing that you have to keep in mind. Am I judging them or their action or what they're thinking? It's not about giving opinion. It's about being there for them and listening.
Well, what I love about that experience was your friend trusted you enough to talk with you about that because you gave that opening, right? Like, obviously they cared about you because they were calling to say goodbye, mm-hmm. but you also giving them that space and giving them permission to do that is something that is so important. Because I think that, like you said, there are these myths that we have. And one is that we're going to put it in someone's mind, right? And there's another myth that, like, if we talk about it, we're going to make somebody want to actually go through and not only think about it, but also, like, actually start making a plan about suicide. And that's just not true. That's not true.
No, you take the burden away, right? They feel that, wow, it's like a relief. Someone can listen to me. So warning signs, right?
You want to
talk about them?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to divide into two categories of warning signs. One is that
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yes. This, I know I'm always dividing into two.
Hey, that's beautiful.
Because
it's okay.
I try to make it simple, but step by step, right?
That's what we're all about here.
Yeah. So the first, let's say, first package of warning signs, they're very similar to depression. If you type on Google, depression symptoms, you're going to see that many of those symptoms, they can be warning signs for suicide. So personal withdrawal, they become, and of course it has to do with who they are. You have to know the person. It can be the opposite, or they were very withdrawn and now they're talking to some people, they're calling friends. It's a change in behavior. It's basically changing behavior, mm-hmm. but it can be sadness. It can show up as anger, frustration. You have some verbal warning signs. They can say things like, oh, there's no point in living. I don't see the point. I wish I didn't wake up tomorrow. So these are some of the verbal warning signs. You can see change in appearance too. They don't shower anymore. You know, a woman who wears makeup, they're not wearing makeup anymore. You can tell that there is a sense of they don't care about appearance anymore. So that's another one. Sleep patterns change. They start sleeping a lot, or the opposite. They don't sleep anymore. They have insomnia. So they have eating habits may change. So some of these symptoms are very similar to what we know there are symptoms of depression. But the main thing that we need to look at, because suicide, we usually think of on and off. And that's a mistake that we make a lot in terms of suicide. They're either suicidal or they're not. But there is actually a continuum when we talk about suicide. So it starts with thoughts. Many of us have thoughts of suicide at some point in our lives. It's not as uncommon as we think. So you're going through some personal crisis, whatever that is, then, wow, I wish I died. I wish I disappeared. So these are thoughts, and they can come up here and there. But then you can evolve. I don't even like to use the word evolve, but another step up would be suicidal ideation. So this is something that's always there. It's like pounding in your brain. It's always an option, right? If you go further up, then you have suicidal ideation with intent. You are actually actively thinking about attempt, right? Then you go into attempt and completion. So it's a continuum. So it's important for you to know where they are. And you have planning too. I forgot about the planning stage. So I try to identify where they are. Are they thinking about suicide? Are they really planning? And that's what I did with my friend, the example that I gave you before. I tried to understand, and she actually told me, wow, she's far up. Right.
Yeah, she was far along.
She had everything planned. So from that, you only go to attempt, right?
Well, and what amount of hope that someone can be so far in that continuum, and they can still come back around to us.
You can always come back around, and I can tell you from research, from number, from all the knowledge that I've had, it's most of the time you can prevent suicide. So warning signs. You were talking about the continuum. That's what you do. Let me see where they are, because the interventions are different. But there are some warning signs. And now when I look at in retrospect of what happened to my father, I see all of them. My father was like tick, tick, tick. All the what I call the red flags were there. These are warning signs that indicate this person is really advanced. I mean, the planning, they are resolved. They don't see any other options anymore. And these are, for example, what my friend did. They start calling people to say goodbye. Old friends they haven't talked to in a while. Family members that they haven't talked to. It's about saying goodbye. And you can hear many, I'm sure you heard this, someone who lost a family member to suicide. Wow, but they, you know, they were okay. They were calling us and they were talking to us. He was very, talkative and getting in touch with friends. It looks like it's actually an improvement. So it's very tricky.
Right.
But that's one of the red signs. So calling to say goodbye. The other one is getting their affairs in order. My dad, few months before he died, he called me and he said, Paula, can we have lunch? And we had lunch and said, listen, I was thinking about opening a joint account, me and you. And at the time he was having some financial problems and I was trying to help him out. So I thought, wow, that's a good idea, right? Good idea, because it makes things simple. And he has asked me for a copy of my documents. But now looking back, and I know because he actually wrote a letter to me and posted the letter, actually telling me everything that he wanted me to do in terms of the money he had and the apartment and everything. So they get their affairs in order. They pay their debts, credit cards, they close their accounts. So it's about preparing so that, for example, they won't leave any problems behind for the family. So right. That's another red flag, because they're really, really resolved. Another one is, and this, it's very subtle, but I noticed, my sister noticed in my dad. One day before he died, he went to see my sister again to say goodbye. And she said that she sensed that it was not just a checking in visit, a normal visit. She said that I could sense that there was something wrong. But the one thing that she noticed was that he wouldn't talk about the future anymore. And something very simple. I wasn't in Brazil. I was on vacation here in the US. And she would ask him, Dad, are you going to pick up Paula at the airport? For some reason, my dad loved to go to airports. He always picked us up. And he would avoid the, he would never answer. He would go, oh, you know, Paula, I remember, you know, this trip that I took with her. This is another warning sign that it's a red flag. They keep going to the past. They become very nostalgic, talking about good moments in their lives. And my sister thought that was the oddest thing. And she kept asking him like three times, because she wanted to know, are you going to pick her up? And he would change the subject. And the reason why they don't talk about the future is because they are resolved. They know there will be no future. So that's why that's a red flag too.
Right.
Yeah, I think these are the main ones. So becoming nostalgic, getting affairs in order, calling to say goodbye. So these are things that if you identify some of these, you really have to be, you have to have an intervention that's more serious in terms of involving people, talking to them directly, and sometimes even taking measures like hospitalization or something.
Right, right. Well, I'm wondering, one of the things that I heard you say, especially with like the red flags, not planning for the future, this strikes me as something that makes a lot of sense, especially since you had helped us to understand that a lot of times whenever people are in that suicidal mindset, that a lot of times the things that it looks like they're going through mimic depression in a lot of ways. And whenever people are in depression, they actually cannot plan for the future, look to the future. And it sounds like that seems very similar to those that are thinking about suicide. So one of the things that I'm wondering is that you said that there is a certain level of avoidance that ends up happening whenever we question them. And I wonder, I guess, how do I want to ask this? What I'm trying to think of is there a way of distinguishing between someone's experiencing depression and someone that's experiencing like these suicidal thoughts? And I don't know what the answer is, right? Because they're so similar. I imagine that'd be pretty difficult.
Yes, but I think the quick answer is ask. Don't be afraid to ask. Because, for example, my sister, she noticed there was something wrong. And of course, this haunted her for a long time. Right. The fact that she didn't actually ask, because she had a feeling there was something off, that there was something wrong. And she actually thought, what was he thinking about, suicide? So they are avoiding talking about the future, but not talking about suicide and suicide ideation. So the best way to know is just ask the question.
I think that there's a certain simplicity to that that's important. And I think that the worst case scenario that ends up happening is someone says no, and you're like, okay, I was wrong, whatever. But there's so much fruit to bear if they are actually thinking about it and you ask them and give them that space to actually talk about it. So that was actually going to be the next thing that I was going to ask you, is like, well, what do you do if you know someone's suicidal?
What do you do if you know? Yeah. So if you know where they are, right? And they say, yes, I'm thinking about suicide. So first of all, put all your judgments in a box, close it, lock it, throw it away, and be ready to listen, because this is going to be a very, very tough conversation to have, right? Especially if you're a family member. And I often think about parents with kids. I mean, you work with teenagers, you know how this happens. And it's going, just know that it's going to be a tough conversation to have. So ask the question. If they say yes, sit down and try to understand what the problem is. Because many times us just looking, being an observer and an outsider, we can see solutions that they might not see. And sometimes that can be very helpful, right? Ask them, for example, social support is very important. And here's a tricky thing, and you know this because I know you deal with families and you deal with teens. Be very careful when it comes to involving families, because many times that's where the problem is,
right?
Many times that's the source of the pain. So don't jump into, oh, I'm going to contact the brother, the sister. No, ask them if you should, but try to amplify their social connection, social support. Give them resources. Hotlines can be very helpful. If it's someone who doesn't feel very comfortable talking to, you know, people they know. So sometimes a hotline can be very helpful. Try to take them to a doctor, because it can be mental illness. We know that there is a relationship between mental illness and suicide, especially depression. And that's why the symptoms and warning signs, sometimes they overlap. It's because depression is directly associated with suicide, even though it's not, we have to be very careful with that, because I even used this number for many, many years. We use the numbers. Not 90% of the cases of suicide are related to mental illness. That's not true anymore. It depends, of course, depends on where you are, the countries and the numbers. That's another conversation to have, because there's numbers are not trustworthy many times. But don't focus on mental illness. Focus on the crisis itself, because many times we have, for example, the 2018, I believe, numbers in the U.S., 54% of the cases of suicide were not related to, so the majority were not related to mental illness. So try to understand the sources of pain. Track, I had a very good clinician I was talking to, and he told me, track the pain. Where does it come from? So keep that in mind. Track the pain. Where does the pain come from? It can be financial situation, can be the end of a relationship. Try to find what keeps them here. That's a very good source of information. What has kept you from doing it until now? Because you get sources of hope and so and what keeps them alive. So bring that in. Bring that into the conversation because you want to get them the mindset out of these constricted, suicide is the only solution right now. You want to amplify that. There is what we call a tunneling vision. All they can see ahead of them as a solution, quote unquote, is suicide. So try to amplify that because many times they're not, and if they have mental illness that's not treated, they need to treat it because, as you know, depression paralyzes you.
Right. Right.
Right. You can't see solutions. You just can't. So sometimes that's what you need. And because it paralyzes you, it might need you to do what I did for my friend. Set up the appointment, take them.
And actually follow through to be there. Like you said, take them. But not only that, you set them up, took them to it, and you continue to offer that support beyond this, mm-hmm. beyond the conversation, which mm-hmm. I think is so crucial. Going back to something that you said that I think is so key that I want to make sure that it gets said again, that while mental health may be an indicator, sometimes let's not hang our hat on it. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's so key because just because someone's depressed doesn't necessarily mean that they're suicidal.
Oh no.
And just because someone is maybe, I don't know how I would actually say this. I never thought about it. More mentally healthy doesn't mean that they may not commit suicide, mm-hmm. Or they may not
attempt suicide.
Yes.
I'll be thinking about it. Yeah.
Thank you for the correction. I think that something that is just so key is that, like you said, there are stigmas around it. And I think a lot mm-hmm. of it is missing the acute cases of suicide where this has been something that's been thinking, then like there's this pain that happens, can't see getting around this. And so suicide becomes something that is more encompassing all of a mm-hmm. sudden. I think that that's something that's so important because then it opens up us looking at these red flags in a much more serious light for a broader range of people. Because I think it may be easy to see someone as depressed and like, okay, we've got to keep an eye on them. But someone who maybe doesn't show those signs and like maybe for all intents and purposes displays that their life is really happy, whenever that really may not be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the toughest thing. I actually saw today the president of the American Association of Suicidology. He posted something, said, I've been crying for 2 days, a good friend of mine, and he posted a picture of him. And here I am, and, you know, he just opened his heart. Here I am, someone who knows, I mean, supposedly, right? I know everything about suicide. One of my good friends just took his life, and he's devastated. And it just happened to me, actually, in Brazil. One of a good, very close friend of mine, 2 weeks ago, took his life. Dear friend, and every time it happens, wow, and we still don't see the signs, but that's the thing.
Sometimes they're so subtle.
Don't. Yeah. And sometimes you don't because they don't show. And here, and I'm talking now to those who are going through this pain and are listening to you right now and listen to your great podcast, and they're saying, yeah, I'm going through that pain. Nobody knows. There is no way for us to guess. So I know it's hard, but try, find someone you trust and share your pain with them, as hard as it is. Because there is, even for us, and we know, I know this, but it doesn't mean that I'll know every time. Right. And there's no way.
And people, I think, are more geared towards listening to people that are in pain. if it has to be obvious to them sometimes. I think that so often it's easy for us to look past those that may be in pain because we might not recognize it. Mm-hmm. But if people yeah. come to those that you care about, that love you, and you let them know that you're in pain, it makes it a lot easier for them to respond. But of course, that's mm-hmm. that's risky, right? It's challenging. Mm-hmm. It's difficult.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult. I mean, we've all been there, right? Mm-hmm. In pain, you go, why should I call someone? It's hard. Being vulnerable is the hardest thing there is. But it's really mm-hmm. the only way. And that's how you connect, right?
Well, that's one of the things that I love about asking. And first things first, if someone is going to let you know and tell you that they're thinking about suicide, that's a huge boon because that means that they trust you enough to let you know. Mm-hmm. It's much more scary if they don't let you know, but or you're in the dark about it. But that's what I love about what you said, just being able to ask them about it from a place of that like respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Having it be open, like, hey, can you tell me about this pain that you're going through? Mm-hmm. Talk about what an open door to yeah. be able to talk about something like that.
I have a mentor. He was the first one, you know, back then when it happened to my father, and I started, his books were the first ones I read and absolutely fell in love with him. His name was Dr. Edwin Schneidman, American. He opened mm-hmm. the first Center for Suicide Prevention here in the 60s. So at the time, I was lucky enough and honored to interview him for my book. But I'll never forget one of the things that stuck to my mind, and I say this all the time, is he says, there are only two questions to ask a person who is suicidal. The first one is, where does it hurt? And the second one is, how can I help?
Right.
It's not complicated. It really isn't. It's painful. It's difficult, but it's not complicated.
Well, I think we are the ones that make it complicated. Mm-hmm. So, and what I mean by that is if there's someone that's close to you that is thinking about suicide, and maybe even they tell you, or you pick up on some of these red flags that Paul has talked to us about, and you actually are able to ask them, I think we have to be willing to accept that there is a very good chance that we could be part of that pain that they're experiencing. Mm. And for us to not get defensive about the role that we played mm-hmm. and be able to be in a place where we're just able to receive their experience that they're telling us. So that, we don't get into this weird back and forth that ends up making them feel like they're not heard and they're not understood. But instead being able to put that defensiveness away so that we can actually hear and receive what they're, what they're mm-hmm. telling us about their pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other thing that Dr. Schneidman says that I love is that half of that, talking again about what he calls the suicidal mind, half of it is the pain, and the other half is being alone with the pain. So just right. don't leave them alone. Keep company.
I'm kind of curious, like for you, you've mentioned this a couple times, like how preventable suicide mm-hmm. is. And I see I said it right there and I saw you smirk just a little bit. Talk to me a little more about that.
How preventable it is?
Yes.
I truly believe, and of course I know the numbers, I know the research, and I honestly believe that most of the times you can prevent suicide, and it's by doing things like what I mentioned before, things that are very simple, being present, not being judgmental, amplifying that social support and not doing this alone because it can be really heavy. Mm-hmm. But letting them know that you're not there to judge, but to help. I honestly don't think it's that complicated. Or, of course, if it's mental illness, treat the mental illness. My father was diagnosed with depression, but very proud, You know, and it's another generation. Back then, we didn't talk about mental illness. It was a huge taboo. So he was diagnosed, got the medication, never took them. So that's important too. I mean, follow through with the treatment. But you can't prevent it most of the times. Not all of the times, but most of the times, yes.
Oh, what hope there too, right? This is something where the numbers can be crazy and they can be daunting. And it's something that we have the power to be able to affect in a very positive direction. And not only that, you don't have to be a therapist
Be able to do it. Not at all.
Right?
We're at the end of the line. I mean, by the time they reach us, you know, there have been many interventions that could have been made, and maybe they wouldn't even need to be with us, right?
Right, right. And I think that something that's important is if you are feeling like there may be someone in your life that they're thinking about suicide, that what I'm hearing you say is like, it is okay to ask them, you know, leave your stigmas or, you know, your preconceived notions at the door and ask them with respect and dignity. And it's also okay too, like if you're a parent listening to this, it's okay to try to, you know, get them with therapists to start some of these conversations if your teen is unwilling to have that kind of conversation with you. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like we kind of talk about, like if the source of pain may be in the family, that may be harder mm-hmm. to have those types of conversations. Mm-hmm. But that makes me super hopeful. That this is something that can be very preventable. It can be preventable by any one of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm wondering, Paula, I know that you said that you have an online course that can help people through this as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. I have an online course. It's called How to Help Suicidal People. And it goes through modules. As I said, first, it focuses on you. Here's what we need to look at in terms of your impressions, your opinions. How can you get ready for that conversation, right? Even I go through which kind of resources do you have to have at hand when you have that conversation? What should you search for? And then I talk about the suicidal mind. I mean, what can you expect from this conversation? How is this constricted mind, for example, impacting the way that your loved one sees life and sees their crisis? So I have 6 modules, and I talk about risk factors. Very important, because risk factors is one of those tricky things. Sometimes what you think is a risk factor, and on paper it is. Sometimes it isn't. It can be actually a protective factor. So there are many nuances there that I go into detail. And then I give you like a step-by-step things to avoid, things you can say, verbal language, communication, pay attention to your body language. So important, because we think about communication is just what you say. No, it's what you say. It's what they hear you say. But there's a lot that your body tells them too. So I go through all these stages on how to get ready and really how to help. In what case should you hospitalize, for example? In what case should you take to the doctor? What to avoid, what you can say or avoid saying. So it's a very detailed course online, and you can find it if you go to my website, understandsuicide.com, you click on course, and that's where you find it.
Well, and if I went to that website, understandingsuicide.com, is that also where I'd find links to your podcast and your book as well?
Many resources. My book is there, many resources. And just correct, and it's understand, not understanding.
Thank you.
So it's understandsuicide.com. I tried to get the understandingsuicide.com, but it was taken. So it's understandsuicide.com. And yeah, you can find it. There's a lot of resources there. I go in depth about, you know, hotlines, even if you want to find a hotline or support group in your town or your state. There's a lot of resources, but just click on course and then you have a link direct to the course. And I actually have like a sample so you can, you know, make an informed decision whether or not it's for you.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and being able to impart a lot of your knowledge onto us. I appreciate the time that you took.
Thank you. And thank you for your podcast. It's really great. It makes it so simple for people to understand mental health.
Thank you. And thank all of you guys for joining us for this episode. Until next time, I wish you well.